All right. First things first. I'm audible, I assume, to everybody? People can hear me? Yeah? Yeah? Okay, good. So for those of you who don't know me, my name is Dai Guy. I'll say that again, Dai Guy. And this, I think, is the second to last in the Sutra class series. Is it? Do you know? You don't know? Okay. That is correct? Thanks. Okay. So tonight, we're going to talk about the Metta Sutra, Metta Sutta from the Pali Canon, which is the oldest complete collection of Buddhist texts. And so Metta, I think, you know, it's crept its way into the pop culture, and I think most people know what it means, but generally translated as loving kindness. Right? So the Loving Kindness Sutra. So I'm only going to talk for a few minutes to get us started. And then we're going to do a group exercise. We're going to break up into some small groups. And I've got some handouts which have the sutra itself and then a little piece of paper stapled to it that has kind of a discussion question. They're all unique, so each group will have its own. And I'm hoping people will take about 15 minutes and talk among themselves. And hopefully we can distribute ourselves so that people who've been around for a while can mix with some of the newer folks. We've got folks in here tonight, I think, for the very first time. And so, yeah, and then we'll reconvene and we'll have a facilitated discussion, you know, getting feedback from each of the groups. Hopefully one person from each group can be a spokesperson and tell us what was talked about. And then that should stimulate some kind of conversation and, you know, that I can kind of help kind of, as I say, facilitate. So I think, you know, a lot of the Buddhist sutras can be pretty lengthy and arcane and symbolic and need distillation in order to really understand them. But the Metta Sutra is really brief, right? So much so that I'm actually going to read it to you in its entirety before the group breakout session. And it's in plain spoken language, which is not to say that it's not a deep sutra. And it's a wonderful practice tool. I've probably read it, you know, upwards of 150 times. And I've had very, very good experiences with it. Okay, so a word about enmity, right, or ill will. In Buddhism, there are five hindrances, right? And one of those is enmity or ill will. It's a pretty easy thing to see arising in yourself at times. And, you know, the society's kind of geared up to catalyze or fan the flames of that, of enmity. And, you know, it's everyone's a loser with that ill will, right? You know, the person on the receiving end certainly is, even if it's indirect. But the person who's feeling that enmity, experiencing that, is also suffering from it. I noticed in myself, when I feel enmity, it's always related to some sort of self kind of protection or self-preservation. And fear is at the root of it a lot of times, a feeling of like being threatened, or if not myself directly, somebody I care about, or some group of people with whom I identify, right? You see on the news and something you don't like happening to some marginalized group, and you start to feel a little bit angry about it. It's very common. So this sutra is an antidote to that. Okay. So I'm going to read it to you now, and then we'll do some groups, and I think we'll see what happens. If the group thing doesn't take as long as I think it will, I've got some more stuff to say about metta practice and the sutra at the end before Vespers. We'll see how it goes. We'll play it by ear. I'm hoping more for a live discussion and less talking from me. Let's see what happens. All right, so here we go. To reach the state of peace is how it starts. I should say it's in three kind of pieces. There's a setup piece, and then there's an action piece, and then there's kind of a wind down. So to reach the state of peace, one skilled in the good should be capable and upright, straightforward and easy to speak to, gentle and not proud, contented and easily supported, living lightly and with few duties, wise and with senses calmed, not arrogant, and without greed for supporters, and should not do the least thing that the wise would criticize. So here's the second part. One should reflect. May all beings be happy and secure. May all beings be happy at heart. All living beings, whether weak or strong, tall, large, medium or short, tiny or big, seen or unseen, near or distant, born or to be born. May they all be happy. Let no one deceive another or despise anyone anywhere. Let no one through anger or aversion wish for others to suffer. And then the close out. As a mother would risk her own life to protect her child, her only child, so toward all beings should one cultivate a boundless heart, above, below, and all around, without obstruction, without hate, and without ill will, standing or walking, sitting or lying down, whenever one is awake, may one stay with this recollection. This is called a sublime abiding here and now. One who is virtuous, endowed with vision, not taken by views, and having overcome all greed for sensual pleasure, will not be reborn again. That's it. I'm sure some of the sutras you've been exposed to thus far are a little more lengthy and complicated than that. Not this one. All right, so I don't know how many of us there are in here, but what if we had groups of five? Can we do that? And then I will walk around and hand something to each of you, and then we'll give you about 15 minutes. And as I said, please distribute yourselves so that people who've been around for a while are with some of the new folks. So, folks, if we can wrap it up. And it's like people don't really need to go back to where they were. You can just stay with your group if you want to. And we'll wrap up when we get to Vespers. We can all move back to... Yeah, why not? Okay. All right. So it's, you know, I was listening to all of you, and you know, I gave you some extra time because everybody seemed so, you know, involved in discussion. I almost wanted to let you go longer, but then we'll run out of time. So the cue was I heard somebody talking about the Green River over here in Utah.
I just got back from the Green River.
Did you? Yeah. So where did you put in?
Sandwash.
Yeah. Okay. I am very familiar with the Green River, but mostly up here, Flaming Gorge Dam in the upper area. But anyway, and the Colorado. But All right. So, all righty. So let's start. Let's just do a clockwise thing. We'll start with this group. And then we'll work our way around. And hopefully the spokesperson would be willing to maybe read what was on the little piece of paper and tell us what you guys discussed. And yeah, I'm assuming you probably meandered away from the question and talked about other things too. So if you have like an upshot of what you talked about, let's hear it.
Our prompt was... Well, we had two.
You got the mic.
Okay. Yes. So we had two prompts. The first one we discussed was, where was it? It was our lives. Okay. To reach the state of peace, one skilled in the good should be living lightly and with few duties. Our lives are replete with duties. We're not forest monks. How might this guidance apply to the life of a modern human with a career and family? Yeah, and I had mentioned that that prompt was interesting to me because that was the one thing I really like tuned into while you were reading this was that one should live lightly and with few duties because that is very hard. Probably, I can speak for only for myself, that's hard in my life, and I imagine it's hard for many people to live with few duties. We discussed how perhaps it's a matter of perspective. Our duties are only duties if we see them as chores versus the rhythms of our daily lives that are just what they are. Does that sum it up? Is there anything you all might add to that? And then our other prompt was, To reach the state of peace, one skilled in the good should be. The sutra begins with the words, to reach the state of peace, and then lists attributes conducive to peace. Other people's lives revolve around seeking excitement. Reflect on the relative effects of peace and excitement. And then we had a discussion around peace and excitement. How would I sum up? This is what led me to talk about the Green River. To me, that's a very peaceful place that is also exciting. So the two things don't have to be mutually exclusive, although we could skew too much toward one or the other. Excitement, seeking excitement, to me sounds a little like kind of seeking dopamine hits and might not be as fulfilling long-term as the relative effects of peace.
Okay, well, thank you.
Yeah.
So, you know, that living lightly and with few duties, I was wondering what might come up. I was thinking, you know, I've watched the trajectory of my life over the last, say, 25 years, and although there's been duties all along, I've got plenty of them here, there are lots of other things that take up a lot of space, you know, and little by little, you know, you sort of renounce these things. Renunciation takes place. It's involuntary, really, with a dedicated practice. It seems like it just happens of its own accord. And so I was wondering if somebody might work their way out of duties, like you have to take care of your children, and you have to go and do your job and deal with your to-do list, and maybe you have to fix something in your house. But maybe there's a lot of other things that can be let go of to simplify a life and make it more conducive to practice. So I was wondering if that might arise in the conversation. And as far as seeking excitement, I think you hit it, you know, that getting addicted to it. You know, when I was a younger man, it was a lot of excitement seeking, you know, and it was just like one thing after another. And of course, you got to keep upping the ante, and then eventually you can get yourself into some trouble. So, so you know, seeking peace, on the other hand, has been pretty pretty rewarding, and something that it took me till later in life to actually think, you know, maybe that's an alternative I'm actually interested in, is seeking some peace. And yeah, more vast, less high. Yeah. All right. You guys.
Okay. Our statement was to reach the state of peace, one skilled in the good should be contented and easily supported. So we discussed the relationship between peace and contentment, and we're trying to figure out, we all pretty much agree they're not exactly the same thing. But we had a lot of good discussion about, or are they sort of like a Venn diagram kind of overlapping, or is one within the other one? And so that was an interesting discussion, and we sort of identified that we thought that a certain definition of peace could have sort of peace, but not be fully contented with everything going on. Maybe sometimes when we're sitting here in Zazen, you feel peaceful for a moment, but doesn't mean you have full contentment in your overall life. So a lot of the discussion between those things was kind of trying to identify how one relates to another. And does anybody want to add anything to that part before I go into the... I could pause there. The other part was, what does it mean to be easily supported, which is kind of part two of the discussion. But do you have any comment on the peace and contentment?
No, just go right ahead, please.
Easily supported, that was interesting because it sounds nice, easily supported, but then we're like, well, does that mean you don't need much? Or the supports you need are thin and easy and small? Or you're really open to being supported? So we had a lot of discussion about, well, what does easily mean with that? We could take it different ways, and just how that's kind of fun that we all kind of can interpret that differently. Mm. Of course, it'd be nice to be easy, but then we also said, well, what if it's hard to support somebody because they're having a real hard time? Mm-hmm. Does that mean that they're not that we don't want those people or something, right? And we said, no, that's silly. So we talked about these supported, and Heather had a nice metaphor of working in the garden and looking at plants that need support. Right. And knowing the right time when they need the support and the right time to remove the support. And even removing support the absence of a framework at the right time is actually supporting the plant long term. So it's like support through removing help is actually support in a weird way. Yeah. And so we talked about a lot of different kinds of non-material support that way, like, you know, the low-hanging fruit, like the smile and the kind words, but then we got into sunshine and we got into being with people, and we started talking about the support of the overall, of the three treasures, the Buddha, the kind of cultural support of the tradition that we're in and the ancestors, feeling a support from that, feeling a support from sort of the things that we say sometimes. So we talked about various kinds of support.
Right. So I wondered, you know, I think the cue up I had in there asked to think about non-material, right? Yeah. But I think it sounded to me like you were talking more about offering support than receiving it, right? And so I was curious about that, you know, it's like, How much can we get by without needing a lot of support? Now, sometimes support's absolutely necessary, right? You know, people have lots of difficult things happen in their lives, including things that are extremely traumatic, and they need a lot of support. But I feel like there is some advantage in releasing little by little the need for a lot of different kinds of supports. There's definitely a benefit associated with that. We come here, and this is kind of a support place, right? You know, we talk about, you know, the highest Buddha, the most immaculate Dharma, and the harmonious Sangha. Yeah, and we take refuge in the Sangha, right? Yeah. So this is a place of support. Huh, it's interesting, isn't it? You know, it's like a lot of this was conceived for someone who lives a much more bare bones existence than do we. But I wonder a lot about how we bring it from something like that, more monastic, into a life, you know, like such as we have. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes.
I
do. Yeah, for me personally. Yeah, I'm not suggesting that this is what other people should necessarily do. But as I age, I find that I need less support in a variety of ways, and I eventually we'll get to an age where I'll probably need a lot more support, unless I die before then. But, yeah, it's a...
I interpret the complete opposite way.
Okay, well, let's run around, and then we'll do the mic, and we'll get... I would love to have you elaborate on that after we do Reju et al.
Hello? Our little slip said, one should reflect. May all be happy and secure. May all beings be happy at heart. And our prompt was, metta meditations are essentially well wishes for ourselves and others. How might such wishes actually benefit others? So we talked about how they can benefit others and kind of by like remembering that that's our intention, and holding it as an intention impacts the way that we relate to others. And so even if we are, for instance, sending metta to someone far, far away who we're never actually going to interact with, our intention to send metta like impacts the people who we are interacting with. We talked about how it just feels better to act from a place of metta than it does to act from a place of enmity, and to hold that as like our intention. We also talked about how it emphasizes all beings and what it's like to send metta to beings that it's easier in some ways to feel enmity for, because they are harming us, or it looks like they are causing a great deal of harm, or there's some tension or something like that. And we recognize that that can be really difficult. But also, it seemed like there was a way in which it also felt really necessary and easy, and even easy, in that like people who are really harming other people are also acting out of a sense of wanting to ease their own suffering, and they have a deep sense of delusion about how to do that. And so sending them metta and wishing to ease their suffering might actually be the way to like relieve some of the suffering that they are causing.
Thank you.
We were also, there was also some really nice connections to precepts, in particular, the pure precepts, cease from evil, do only good and do good for others. Those were good. There was some curiosity about like the ways in which humor can, like, humor as a way of connection, like if there's like teasing or light ribbing or something, like if as a means of connection, how that connects to metta and how that can actually be connecting or not. And several of us spoke from our own experience of it, and it seems like it's highly contextualized. but is maybe worthy of reconsideration. let's see, what else came up? Yeah, thanks.
You got it?
I think.
Okay.
Those were the hits I was. Yeah.
How many people have done meditation practice in here? Don't be shy. Let's see, everyone almost, except for a couple. Okay. All right, let's try the next group. And thank you.
So our quote was, let no one deceive another or despise anyone anywhere. The prompt was, despising others is often accompanied by praising oneself. What ideas do you use to justify your dislikes or episodes of ill will? So, and we started by talking about the difference between despising and just being angry about something, and how those two things felt different. That anger sometimes felt important, but that despising had a different flavor, that was more judging, separating out. We talked about how it sort of was a reaction to feel like we're not like that. And so praising of the self is sort of like, oh, that's not me, I don't do that. And how that feels different than just feeling uncomfortable or angry in a situation, because it has a separateness that comes to it. And we talked about different ways that we deal with the discomfort of seeing a situation that we really don't like, and how the justification of saying, oh, I'm better, I don't do that, they're bad, is one reaction, and another is to sort of do like a false metta where you sort of lean in with like wanting to relieve your own discomfort and sort of bypass the discomfort and just feel warm and fuzzy without actually doing the real work. Did I miss anything? Anything else? Okay. That was kind of it. We had a second prompt that we didn't really get to.
Okay, doesn't matter. So. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I know it's interesting. I catch myself frequently, you know, with these little microbursts of enmity. And I think because of the amount of time that I've spent in metta practice and reading this sutra, I had vowed during the spring term to read it every day allowed, and I didn't quite make that, but I got about 85% of the days, and I read it to my dog. I read it out loud, and so he sits there, and you know, he can't obviously understand the words, but he definitely feels the energy of it, you know. And but there's these microbursts of enmity during the day, and you know, you catch them quickly, and then you stay with this recollection, as the sutra says, and yeah, almost without fail, I find the self-praising in there. Maybe it takes a very vague or diffuse form, but it's in there, you know. It's like the good people, like me, right? Yeah. All right. Let's see. We're getting close. Let's do the last group, and that might be all we have.
Hello. This is Thomas. I just want to quickly say, it seems to be an effect of my term vow of not hiding self that the microphone keeps finding its way to me. It's like the second or third time in a row. But anyway, our quote was, "With loving kindness for the whole world, should one cultivate a boundless heart. Whenever one is awake, may one stay with this recollection." And our prompt was, "We learn a lot when we notice and study our moments of indifference or unkindness. What's it like to experience dissonance between our day-to-day behaviors and spiritual aspirations?" Pretty quickly, we just said, like, bad, not good. and we tried to, like, drill down a little bit into, like, you know, what a bit more detail about why it feels bad or how it feels bad. And, like, for some of us, it was, like, almost, like, visually bad. Like, it just, like, made the surroundings like look worse. Others is more like a mental feeling bad, just like it's just ruminating and dark and just like everything just is like just worse. And then of course there's like sometimes physical sensations, which can range from not really like noticing too much when it's like on the lower end of like irritation or annoyance, like, or it's more in the head area, to like clenching or like almost like a strangling motion. So there's, feeling, we didn't have too much way of, going the alternate route of like what it feels like to, like feel loving kindness. I think that would have been an interesting route to go down, and glad some folks more had an opportunity to do so. But yeah, I don't recommend the dissonance.
Yeah, no, I set you up for that, didn't I? So sorry. There's always quite a bit of dissonance, you know. I think humming around in the brain.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so it's practice is all about that, you know, studying and not turning away from. And making friends with that stuff, and then, you know, practice is an interesting thing. You know, it's like I think Kyogen used to say, you know, this stuff doesn't yield to the full frontal assault, right? Instead, it's like a gentle happening in the background. Things start to slough off, and it, almost without effort, there's an effort, but it's over here, and then things happen in your life, you know, and you start to notice the changes in the way that you're interfacing, yeah, with each other, you know, with yourself. So we're at about 8:48, and so we're going to wrap it up here pretty quick. I just, for the people who haven't done metta practice, there's a couple here and maybe one back there. You probably have a feel for it now. You know, the middle verse in here is a set of metta verses, and there's lots of them. There's plenty of variations. The ones that I use are from a book by Thich Nhat Hanh called No Mud, No Lotus, and they're in an appendix to that. And they're lengthier, and there's more, I think, more nuance to them than this. And, you know, I adapted them for myself to include a couple things that weren't in there, you know, to kind of, and that's what, you know, if you do decide to undertake metta practice, it's something that requires some steadfastness in order for steadfastness, you know, stick, you know, some. Yeah, stick to it. Yeah, just as the rest of this stuff does, you know. And the practice does yield some results pretty quickly, especially that staying with the recollection as you notice more and more and more of the enmity. And I think that's the launch pad, right? to loving kindness.
I want to put another thing because it feels good. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good. Yeah. Yeah, Kakamyo says he can feel his blood pressure going down. Yeah, so maybe that's true. You were going to say something before, and do you remember what it was?
Oh, yeah, I realized that I interpreted that line easily, supported differently from you.
Yeah.
So not being open to receive support.
Yeah, easily, yeah.
And you know, Kakamyo gave a Dharma talk recently where he talked about in his younger years, if he was carrying a large load of heavy things and he came to a door, he wanted to be able to open the door himself. He didn't want the door to support him, to help him.
Right.
And that has evolved over time.
Yes.
And it kind of feels like metta. It feels very nurturing, actually, eventually.
Yeah.
For people to receive and gift. It's a gift to the giver, to ask the giver.
Thanks. Yeah. So I bet you if we all took this thing home, or we looked it up at the web address and read it pretty frequently, many of these lines would start to have more than one meaning. And so, yeah.
Are you able to share what your metta practice
is? Am I able to share?
Like the actual words that you would go over in your...
Can I recite them? Mm-hmm. Is that what you're saying? Let's see if I can. May I be peaceful, happy, enlightened body and spirit. May I be safe, healthy, and free from injury. May I be free from anger, affliction, fear, and anxiety. May I learn to look at myself with the eyes of understanding and love. May I be able to recognize and touch the seeds of joy in myself. May I be able to identify and see the sources of anger, craving, and delusion in myself. May I know how to nourish the seeds of joy in myself every day. May I be able to live fresh, solid, and free. May I be free from grasping and free from aversion, but not be indifferent. There they are. I forgot, I actually modified them a little bit. I missed a couple words, but pretty close. Yeah. So that's like 90%, 95. Okay, Vespers. Yes.
New,
thank you. Yeah, yeah.
You also offer it in to somebody that you care deeply about, perhaps somebody you're neutral about, perhaps somebody or a situation where you feel some ill will towards, perhaps going for people you despise. Mm. So it's not just for yourself.
Right. Yes, and then, you know, actually, and I think Reiji was hitting on this, you know, that some of the richest practice of all is when you get out there into those outer valences and you start trying to wish. I find that there's nobody in my life personally that I have like the loathing for, and so I have to kind of rely on like television images.
Guy says, watch more television.
Yeah, of people that make you mad.